I put the light on, it spoils that. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning and welcome to the most intimate room in Cartagena. Welcome to the Geographic Regions Working Group. The idea this morning is not so much for me to give a formal presentation, but rather to get a discussion on some of the issues that the working group will be addressing in the final report. So far, the working group has issued two reports. The first one looked at how geographic regions were used throughout the ICANN organisation. And the second report, which was put out for public consultation in November, looked more at the why, what were we seeking to achieve by the use of geographic regions. And then the final report, which is what we will start working on now, is do we need changes, what changes should there be? And it's for that reason that we wanted to have this meeting this morning to try and get some feedback and thoughts from you all. I see some very familiar faces in the audience who have seen many of my slides before, but there are some first-time attendees. So just to set the scene, I'm going to very quickly flip through some slides that have been on the go, off and on, for I guess about 5 years since I first started this. If we can look at the initial purpose of ICANN regions, they were first defined way back in 1998 as an aid to ensuring, and I quote from the bylaws, broad international representation on the ICANN board. And the makeup of the ICANN board should reflect the geographical and functional diversity of the internet. And the procedures for appointing board members were to be sufficiently flexible to permit evolution to reflect the changes in the constituency of internet stakeholders. Now, this was implemented by creating the current five regions. It was probably based on the existing and planned RIRs. The allocation of countries to regions used the UN Statistics Division tables, but it was greatly modified, and I'll quickly show you how it was modified. Now, the board said that they wished to adopt an independent list, and that makes an awful lot of sense. But in fact, the list that they adopted was very severely modified. When we look at the two regional structures, this was the breakdown according to ICANN, and it is essentially the current breakdown still. And the one in green underneath is the breakdown according to the UN Statistics Division. And the two are supposed to be the same, but are they? If we start with UN Statistics, you can see that it too has got five regions, and the Americas can be split up by them in two different ways. One option is to split it into Latin America and Caribbean and Northern America, or the alternative is just to talk about the Americas, and they talk about South America and North America. Now, the first thing that ICANN did was they deleted Australia and New Zealand right from the outset, which seemed like a good idea, and they moved it into Asia. And it became Asia Pacific, with a completely different number of countries in it. Next step was, let's get rid of the Americas as well, which only seems fair. And they took the Northern American section and moved that up to a region on its own. And then it took Latin American Caribbean and moved that up. So we're back to five regions, but they're quite different regions from UN Statistics. And then there are a whole lot of countries that ICANN recognises that UN Statistics doesn't recognise. Plus, ICANN decided that all overseas territories should be added to the region of their parent country. So, for example, and this is how I started in all this, Cayman Islands, which is my country, was allocated to the European region, which didn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. However, if you do those changes, Latin America goes from 46 countries to 33, Africa goes to 54, Asia Pacific to 73, Europe to 75 because it gains all its overseas territories, and North America goes to 8 because we bring in American Samoa and a couple of other places. And this then is the world according to ICANN. Now remember, the world according to ICANN and the world according to UN Statistics is supposedly the same. Doesn't look like it to me. And in fact, if you include the uplifting of Latin America and North America, 40% of all the countries are in different regions than they were allocated to by the UN Statistics. And even if you don't count those, 17% of countries are in different regions. So one has got to ask the question, did ICANN go along with an independent list, or did they create their own list? And I suppose you could also ask the question, and does it matter? And that's sort of where we are. Looking at another issue, it said we need to be flexible. And this was a big point from the green paper and the white paper, and indeed discussions between ICANN and the US Department of Commerce, that the board composition should reflect the makeup of the internet, and it should be flexible enough to change as the internet changed. Did this happen? Well, have a look at some of the statistics here. You may not see them all that clearly on there, but I've got some pie charts that'll bring it out a bit better. And what I've done here is looked at the number of internet users back in December 2000, and then the most recent data that I've got, which in fact now, because it's an old slide, is about a year old. Easier to look at here in this pie chart. Back in 2000, roughly even split between North America, which is sort of the mauve colour, Europe, which is the green, Asia Pacific, which is the ready colour. We now move on to the percentage in 2009. And you will see that North America and Europe, much, much, much smaller percentage than it was back in 2000. And of course, Asia Pacific growing tremendously. Africa now making a good presence. But even more interesting is if we look at this chart, where the red colour down the bottom shows the actual number of internet users at the moment, whereas the green column shows the actual population, in other words, the potential number of internet users. And what you can see from this is that North America in particular is just about reaching its maximum capacity. It's not going to grow that much more. Even Europe, it's about halfway there, but even if everybody in Europe went online, it's still not going to reach the present number of users in Asia Pacific. And look at the potential in Asia, Australia, Pacific. Huge. Same in Africa. Big change possible. So the question here is, did even the original board actually represent the makeup of the internet? Does it now? Because of course we haven't changed anything in the regions, although we were supposedly had that flexibility. Nothing in fact has changed between 2000 and 2009 or even 2010. Question, what should we do about it? I mean, just looking at this one slide, there must be a good case for increasing the number of regions or splitting the Asia Pacific, Australia. I'm not saying, suggesting for a moment that number of internet users is the only measure. You could look at servers, you could look at all sorts of things, but the trend is there, and that's all I'm getting at. I don't want to argue about decimal points or whatever. Quick word about the original goals. Geographic diversity, which reflects the geographical diversity of the internet, which is flexible enough to continue to reflect the makeup of the internet. And my comments would be, okay, happy with the geographic diversity bit. Don't think it really reflects the geographic makeup of the internet now. We haven't seen any flexibility at all. We've froze the situation back in 2000. The structure is, I would say, ICANN specific rather than an independent authoritative list that was sought. GAC came up with this phrase of, we recommend that we should use international norms, and I'm going to look at international norms in a moment, but I don't think it complies with international norms, because however you look at it, the regions don't correspond to anybody else's definition of regions or continents or anything. And just out of interest, and it's just a small legal point, the deviations were never actually approved by the board in any resolution. Looking at this international norms, we tried to find some others that could be used. UNDP uses Africa, the Arab states, Asia and the Pacific, Europe and the Commonwealth of Independent States, Latin America and Caribbean. So that's one option. UN Economic and Social Council uses, and I'm not going to read them, but you can see they're different. The ITU uses, or at least a part of the ITU does. A different bit of the ITU uses a different grouping. And another, and another. That's just within one organisation. Some questions then, and we can start chatting about some of these. Are ICANN's current geographic regions consistent with international norms? I don't think they are, particularly. I mean, another thought, and this is where we can start talking about it. In many organisations like the UN, you have groupings that are dynamic. Some last for some time. For example, Commonwealth countries, UK Commonwealth, ex-Commonwealth countries, are a grouping that exist and lobby as an entity. You have others like the small island states that tend to exist for some time. On the other hand, you get groupings that come together to deal with a particular shared interest, and once that has been dealt with, it disappears. And that is more the international norm than fixed regions. Do the present ICANN geographic regions enhance or detract from ICANN's goal of reflecting functional, geographical, and cultural diversity? Remember, culture got added in when ICANN set out its core values. And it said that cultural diversity was important as well as geographic diversity. But nothing was done to implement that. And the regions weren't changed, there was no new mechanism brought in. So how are we achieving that cultural diversity? In fact, some of the things that happen at the moment actually work against cultural diversity, because where you have dependent territories aligned with the region of their home country, you end up with a silly situation where you could have a member on council from Jamaica, because that would be from Latin American Caribbean, and you could also have one from the Cayman Islands, which is right next door, same basic culture, but the Cayman Islands is from Europe, so you're actually not helping your cultural diversity the way it's set up at the moment. I'm just not going to go through these particularly, but these are the sort of questions that we are looking at. The thing in brackets are the organisation that raised the question. So I will leave these up, and I will now try and throw this open a little bit more. One of the things I touched on, and here I've got to put down my caveat, we are wanting to talk about things that will be in the final report, the recommendations. We're at the beginning of that work, so anything that I say is probably just being a straw man, putting things up for the sake of discussion. They're not conclusions that the working group has reached. But let's take one which is perhaps simple and straightforward on the face of it. Increasing the number of regions. I mentioned that the Australia Pacific region is geographically huge. It is numerically huge. On the face of it, it would seem logical to split that into two regions. Now, two or more regions. The consequences of creating additional regions within ICANN are not just its change, it would also have significant financial impact, both on ICANN Core and particularly in ALAC. Any thoughts, any feedback from... I see there's Australia and New Zealand wishing to make a comment there. We've got a mic at the front.
Dave, thanks for that outline. My name's Keith Davidson, and I'm the chair of the Asia Pacific Top Level Domain Association, which has 36 of the 72 Asia Pacific located countries as members currently. Just some reflections. Firstly, I think some of the influences on the way that the geographic regions were established initially were due to the fact that there were two regional TLD organisations in existence and their boundaries warranted respect for some reason. And I think that's diminished a little. Yeah. One of the issues about dividing the massive Asia-Pacific region is that when you start to look at methodologies of division, you can get into culture and language issues where you could upset other apple carts. For example, the Middle East is seen as quite a distinct region, but the North African states that share the language probably feel that they would belong more together with that smaller sub-region. So you may be creating more problems than it's worth. So to me, the issues are, what are we seeking to do? One is the issue of representation and the methodology by which the regions appoint or are appropriately represented in the hierarchy of ICANN. And the other is that there's a whole lot of issues that affect the world differently. And for example, New Zealand is part of Asia-Pacific region, but our law is largely based on English law, and so we have far more commonality with Europe in the legal and regulatory sense than we do with, say, communist China, or which is part of our region. So our ability to share resources sometimes is in Europe, but quite often is also in Asia-Pacific. So there's two separate issues. One is the representation methodology within ICANN, and the second is how to not even think about regions, but think about issues and where you have commonality of issues.
Thanks. Yeah. Absolutely agree. I think the only place where you have a formal requirement is in the representational issues, and it's difficult to get away from that. But I was trying to get the concept of perhaps having two organisational structures, one formal, which is necessary for the representational things, and a less formal one that allows, for example, the Arab states to have a special interest group that can lobby for common things of common interest without it being necessarily a formal regional structure.
Thank you. What are the international norms? I don't know. There is not. You have said that the UNDP regional division is different from the ITU one, different from the UN one. I remember when we were in the World Summit on Information Society, the civil society had another regional division. They put, for example, North America with Europe. So there is not norms.
Great.
What we need, I think, what is the interest of making more regions in ICANN? I don't think that there is a real interest. But we have to think about the regional division. We have to think about the situation of internet in those regions. Geographic division, but with the situation of the internet users, the industry of TLDs, etc. So if we can, if we try to do that, perhaps we will have another division, but which is not very far from the division, the actual division, but which will be perhaps more useful for ICANN. Yeah. Tijani Benjema from ALAC.
Bart, could you put that light on, the other one? It's from the other side.
On the other side. Right. Yeah. There you go.
Thank you, Dave. Eric Brenner-Williams, also from ALAC, from the North American region. I had some questions as I saw the first slides. One is that the slides about market penetration offer us guidance on how we should spend outreach money. I would say that we don't really need to spend outreach money in North America, my region. We do need to spend outreach money in Asia Pacific. So if we're trying to reach users who have not yet gotten into the net, not yet gotten into the system, the spending in North America wouldn't really have much return on our investment. Mm-hmm. Spending the same money doing outreach in Asia Pacific would have and Africa would have a tremendously different return on investment. So there is guidance to ICANN marketing or to generally our message expense or from this information. Also from those slides, I'd be curious to know what the choices are available and what their outcomes are for the divisions of Asia Pacific. So for instance, if the Australia New Zealand when split off, does their penetration resemble more like that of North America and Europe, in which case we have the same information about spending money doing outreach into those markets, that it wouldn't be a good return on investment, at least not as good as spending the same dollars in Africa and Asia, the rest of Asia mm-hmm. and the Pacific. So those were sort of technical questions arising from the presentation of data that I had. Now let me make a personal observation. I've been used to this for the last 10 years. There never will be a North American Indian in any position which is appointed to the ICANN structure through ICANN's procedural mechanisms. These will always be taken by persons associated with European expansion into the Americas. The same is true for Latin America as well. There will never be an Indian to the ICANN appointed to the ICANN structure from any part of the Americas. And probably the same applies to Aboriginals and to Maoris in from Australia and Pacific. This is a fact of life. However we pursue diversity, we're not going to have those outcomes with the regime that we have. I'm not saying that they're necessarily good outcomes, we just should be clear about what can't happen. Now, about how we split up the world, we have several choices, as you pointed out. Two that you haven't pointed out, one was referred to by the head of the Asia-Pacific TLD organization, which is similarity of legal cultures being a division of idea or an organizing principle. Mm-hmm. The other one that comes to me because I'm kind of a tech weenie is the network operator group locality of interest. So we have the North American operators group, we have RIPE, we have the Middle East network operators group, we have the AP network operators group. These are localities of service providers who provide the access network and the transit network for our ultimate users of the DNS, mm-hmm. our users. So that's another possible dividing principle, is basically through the nexus of wire bundling.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything that you've said. certainly that we haven't done the in-depth analysis as yet about the consequences of splitting Asia Pacific, if that's something that we wanted to follow. So I can't answer your question, but I think you're right. The penetration, I'm sure, within Australia, New Zealand is pretty much on a par with North America, would be my guess, but we haven't done the research.
One second. My name is Olga Cavalli. I'm from GNSO and from Argentina. I'm curious about your idea that only European Latin Americans can be part of ICANN or representing the region. I think we have showed some changes in the region recently. We have presidents that are not necessarily Europeans, and this is changing. I know it's a challenge, but I think it's changing slowly but surely. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Khaled Fouda. I'm from the League of Arab States, and actually I believe those couple of questions that you have raised in your presentation are very valid and issues that need quite a lot of work to resolve. Well, recently the ICANN board has added six regions to the draft application guidebook for new GTLDs, of which the Arab States is one of those regions. And I have maybe two questions here. Number one, unlike the UN list, those six regions do not have a short term or abbreviation or commonly known as. So Arab States is too long for us to use as or to apply for as a geographic GTLD, and I believe it that goes also for like Asia and the Pacific or South America and the Caribbean. They are all very long terms that cannot be used within the domain name. So is there any way that we can sort of try to find a mechanism where we can relate a short term or commonly known as term for those six regions like the UN list? And number two, this new the border resolution actually applies those regions only for the new GTLD applications, okay? But as you just said, well, the Arab region is sort of a defined region with 22 member states that share the same language, the same culture, the same morals, and many things, actually. So is there also a way where we can work on defining the Arab region as part of the ICANN regions in general and not only just for new GTLDs? Thank you.
Certainly, I mean, there has been a formal request from, I'm afraid I can't remember the title, but the Organization of Arab States to ICANN requesting the creation of a region.
Dave, just a couple of comments and then I have to run to another meeting. I think looking at the existing regional structures that exist in ITU and UN and so on is probably less productive, because I don't think you can find another model which will fit. So this is a bottom-up process of finding what suits within ICANN solely. So my suggestion in that instance is that you start again with ignoring any existing structure, including the existing ICANN structure.
You realise that means ignoring GAC.
You say that like that's a bad thing. And I should add for the record, my name's Keith Davidson, and I'm the chair of APTLD, and I represent .NZ as well. The other thing is an interesting matrix that may put a different slant on things rather than looking at the number of country codes would be the number of registrants or domain names within the regions, to give some sort of balance of representation in that regard as well. Not saying you should choose one or the other, but in terms of balance currently. And just a final point, that APTLD has struggled as the largest populated region, the largest geographic region. We've struggled within our membership regarding whether we should split our region into three for our own purposes or things like that. And so far, the voice of the membership in that region, which is almost exclusively CCTLDs, has been to retain the unified large region, and that we actually, because of our diversity and the challenges that our diversity has, adds richness and texture to what we do. So that's a clear message from our region if other people are suggesting that it should be split. So 36 of the 72 CCTLDs who are members prefer APTLD to remain the unified CCTLD organisation for the region, and that would logically flow through to those Asia Pacific registries operating in the ICANN environment. Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks. John Lawrence is my name. I'm from Oz Registry International. We're a registry services provider based in Australia. We are associate members of two regional organisations and soon to be three, so this is something that, you know, we have some visibility on from a kind of external perspective. I would echo Keith's concern that starting to split regions up is something of a can of worms and a very difficult thing to get right, and I would suspect you'd probably end up with just as many problems as you have at the moment. But one point I wanted to make is that I think there is definitely scope for informal groupings, and I think this has sort of been touched on already, but an example of this is a conference that's now been going on for 3 years, which is run by the Russian Registry, which, for want of any better terms, essentially incorporates the former Soviet Union and the former Warsaw Pact countries, and has... and many of those, particularly, I think, in Central Asia, are not particularly involved in either APTLD or the ICANN structure, so I think that gives them an opportunity to get together, and I think that's really important. And I think we would certainly encourage regions like the Arab states to start developing their own sort of informal conferences on an annual basis, and I think that potentially provides kind of a bottom-up approach, and if these things are viable and start to make sense, then perhaps in time they can be looked at as potential sort of proto-regions or whatever they might become.
Thanks. I mean, very much a personal view, and I'm not speaking for the working group at all here, is, as I think I've said before, the formal structure of regions is needed for, particularly in some SOs, for representational or election purposes. Aside from that, my own view is I'm not sure that there's any particular need for there to be formal regions, and it should be up to the members to group together as best suits them within their particular constituency. But you just can't do that entirely, because there are the few... sort of official formal structures that need to be there.
Yes, I'm Mike Horowitz, and I just want to make a comment from the perspective of the NOMCOM, which I'm on this year. The NOMCOM's responsible for selecting directors for 8 seats, and one of the great challenges that we face is that when you take heart of the goal of being diverse, and yet you have to deal with single-digit numbers of seats, you have a very formidable task. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we have to push back against is the notion that somehow or other that the current, as you point out, arbitrary division that ICANN has adopted creates a sense of entitlement. And to give you a concrete example, this year we will select one individual from North America, which, of course, is about somewhere between 400 and 500 million people, and a fairly, as you point out, a fairly deep penetration of the Internet. And so the notion that one person could represent the diversity of that big chunk of geography and culture and language and economies just doesn't really compute. And there are similar examples, I think, all around the globe. So, you know, I'm very pleased with the progress that you've made. I guess the notion is we ought to try to turn down the volume on the notion that the regions have a representational value that borders on entitlement, because that leads us to a place where we really don't want to be.
I'm not sure that you will ever convince the world at large that there isn't an entitlement, no matter what you do. I think that's fact of life. Any more questions, comments? I mean, I will throw in another issue. Is there any need for there to be a standardized set of regions throughout ICANN? I mean, if you look already, we have various regional structures, because the RIRs have one, which in fact, of course, they're slightly outside ICANN anyway, in some respects. The at large has one. The ICANN's own regional liaison officers are based on quite different functional breakdowns, which make eminent sense. So is there a need for a standardized region, set of regions?
Help. Mike Pallade, just following up on some of the comments of Mike Roberts. I'm serving with Mike as well on the nominating committee this year. And one of the requirements hard-coded in the bylaws of ICANN is that there has to be at least one director from each of the regions serving on the board. And that's one of the reasons why the nominating committee does its selections after the SOs do their elections. So one of the safeguards after the evolution and reform process back in 2003 was to allow the SOs to do their election, and then the non-com was designed to fill in gaps for those regions that would not have representations. So, you know, I'm just raising that as an issue as far as consistency. Whenever it gets to a whenever you define it as a region recognized in the bylaws, that then has implications as far as representation on the board, which carries over to the non-com, as well as obviously within the GNSO council and CCNSO councils regarding the number of representatives from each specific region. So,
yeah, but in fact, the board does it by bringing in non-com. I mean, that works quite well. It avoids the issue that CCNSO has, for example, where the actual electoral constituency is the region, which is different from the board. You fill in and get the regional diversity after everybody else has been appointed. You don't have the problem. CCNSO has the issue of the regions actually define which region you vote for, if you see what I mean. So it's an electoral college, the region, which becomes far more lost the word, but it becomes far more important which region you are in when that region forms an electoral college.
And I'm not disagreeing with that statement, and I think one of the issues that we had on non-com was this year with the director Shireen Chalabet, who has dual citizenship, you know, in that situation with both Egypt and the UK. So for the non-com, that was convenient because it was we were kind of able to increase diversity with sort of a unique, shall we say, qualification. But that was the first director that has ever served on the ICANN board from the Middle East. So it's one of the challenges, and as I said, it's not easy. And as I said, Mike and myself and others, anyone else who has ever served on a non-com, it is a very difficult task that we do in trying to ensure that diversity and representation within the ICANN leadership structure, not only on the board but also the SO and ALAC.
Interestingly, of course, NOMCOM did change its bylaws fairly recently so that you could take into account, let me think now, it wasn't just citizenship but also residency. Similarly, the GNSO, as part of its reorganization, actually subtly changed the diversity requirements and included words as far as is possible, which weren't there before. So a number of constituencies have, I think quite sensibly, relaxed a little bit the diversity requirements in the light of practical experience. Other SOs have not done that yet, but perhaps that's the way to go, so that you do relax it so that common sense comes into play.
Thanks, Mark. This is Olga Cavalli. From the perspective of the GNSO, it's quite challenging because, as you know, we have two houses, contracted, non-contracted one, and we have, before they were called constituencies, now we have stakeholder groups, but they are organized in relation with their function, not with regions. Although they try to have representation from different regions, as you know, some regions of the world are more developed and have more registries, so it's easier to find those representatives from Europe or United States, but it's very challenging to find them from Latin America and other regions of the world. So what we are doing now, it's we have worked in one of our working teams of the GNSO restructuring process, an outreach document that we, it's under revision process, and we the idea is to work with all the activities that ICANN is doing to reinforce the diversity of the GNSO. Thank you.
Hi, this is Rob Hogarth from ICANN staff. I'm in the chat room, and I wanted to pass on a question slash comment slash statement by Roland. He wants to know, I wonder what the population is for the 40% of countries that differ from UN. My feeling is that many islands are often uninhabited.
I don't think many, not many of them are uninhabited. Granted that in some cases the population is relatively small, but if you're that 40% included the whole uplifting of Latin America and North America, so the population there is quite large.
While I have the microphone, I just wanted to note that I still have a few memory sticks here that if anyone is interested, the working group has produced the stick with copies of their existing interim report as well as Dave's presentation. So I'd like to share that with folks here. Thank you.
Either of you have any other comment? No? Okay, the floor is still open. Any other helpful thoughts for us to take into account?
Sorry, this is Eric Brenner-Williams again from North American at Large Regional Organization. The question I should have asked at my very first, and I guess it's now my last, is how to assist the work of
Well, obviously, we would be delighted if you can give some response back to the second report, which is the one that is out for public consultation. It is open for consultation until the 31st of January. It was put out in November, and there's a link to it from ICANN site, obviously. Thereafter, you know, we will be putting out...
Get a bit closer to the microphone, please.
Yeah. Thanks. We'll then be working on the final report, which will have recommendations to the board, and we will put that out as early as we can for public consultation. And again, we would very much like, obviously, feedback from all the communities on that. This is not something we are seeking to impose in any size, shape or form. We're wanting to get a conclusion that is better for ICANN, that will ensure the flexibility that it was designed to be in the first instance but never happened, to help with outreach, to help with participation, and that's the motivation behind it, no more, no less. Okay, well, if there are no further questions, I will draw the session to a close with...
Perhaps you could share with the group what your timetable or thoughts are in terms of next steps and where things would go from here.
Well, you can, because you've probably got it in front of you and I don't.
Just from a very general sense, because we know how challenging the timetable has been for this group, and I think I could certainly echo some of the sentiments of the working group members to be delighted at the turnout at this event. It's certainly... greatly exceeded expectations given the attendance at past working group events, and it may reflect the fact that the working group is, you know, beginning to narrow its focus. You know, the initial report was much more research oriented, and now it's much more what do we do with that. At the end of January, we'll conclude the public comment forum, taking into account the comments here today as well as the written comments. Then the working group is really going to embark on the major tough task of coming up with potential recommendations. And so I would expect that we'd have a similar session like this in San Francisco. I don't know if the working group members feel like you'll have a draft document by that time period or not, but this is really an issue that's ramping up, and I think it will be extremely important for all of you to encourage others to pay attention and participate. Ultimately, what will happen is any recommendations produced by this group, there will be subsequent public comment periods, discussions with the board and the rest, but this is a community-wide working group. Representatives on the team are from all the different advisory committees and supporting organizations, so I think they hope they're going to have a very broad input into this process.
Just to pick up on your point about timing of the next draft, I hope that we will have a very early draft out before San Francisco, because I think that actually helps people formulate their ideas and to give feedback rather than doing something in the abstract. So even if it is a very early draft, I would like to get that out in time before the next meeting. I hadn't asked the working group about that, though. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation. Very grateful for all your input. We will take it all under advisement and look forward to seeing your responses to our public consultations and hopefully at a meeting in next year. Thank you.